Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show.
Photo.com, and this is my little audio diary about my journey through the wonderful, wonderful world of photography. Everybody, hope you're having a good time. You've been having terrible weather still here in Gosport on the south coast of the UK. It's been raining constantly all the time and nary a break for a little bit of sunshine. But I guess that's good. Good for the crops, good for the potatoes, good for the plants. Just not that great for going out and taking them there. Photographs. I've had a bit of a busy week at work, as usual, I know, so every week, don't I? But I've also been a bit down in the dumps as well. Got a bit of cold, got a bit of flu, I would say, that this has helped a bit cold. So you might find the podcast keeps pausing because I have to stop and have a little bit of a cough, but I've got a can of Pepsi Max here to sip on to cool my sore throat. And hopefully I'll be able to get it. It's going to be quite a short podcast this week anyway. What I'm going to talk about is some essentials, essential accessories, but more of that in a little bit. I've not been having a good week, have I? I've been having computer problems. I've got some malware on my laptop, which has meant I've had to... I didn't have to, but you know when you get something on the computer that you know shouldn't be on there, but you get a little bit, you never really trust it, do you, afterwards? So I reformatted it and put a new copy of XP on there. XP, that's true, still running XP. But the beautiful thing I like about putting XP on this little Aspire Acer laptop is it flies along. It's amazing when you put a fresh copy of XP on. And I've been really careful about what I install. Just installing the essentials. Kind of related to this one. Now, you may have been having problems downloading SCL over the last few weeks or months. I don't know. Could be even longer. I'm not sure because iTunes or Zoom or whatever your particular podcatcher you use to aggregate your podcast and put them on a PC player on your computer, it pulls off an RSS feed, which is like a little file that has the details of all the latest episodes in. And whenever I do an episode like tonight, I update that file. And the idea then is that iTunes or the other things look at the file and go, oh, there's a new episode, and they download it for you to listen to. But the company I've been using, Libsyn, have been having a few problems, and when I've been saving the RSS file, which is a little text file, to the server, what I've discovered has been happening is, because they flip from different servers depending on what's going on, like if they're having trouble with things, sometimes the older RSS file is being served up to you guys, apparently. And so if you've been like logging on from, because normally what happens, I will record the podcast on a Sunday night, and I'll upload it on a Sunday night as well. And if everything's going to plan, iTunes will update on a Sunday night and all the other ones as well. But with Libsyn, it's been taking like Monday or Tuesday for it to do it. And even, I've been checking it, it's been flipping back like two or three episodes where it's showing none of the latest episodes are out. So if you're having troubles, my apologies, it should be all sorted out now, hopefully, because Libsyn seems to have sorted itself out, whatever it was doing. But yeah, sorry about that, but you know, just stick with it and that'd be great. If you're listening to this for the first time and you're wondering what I'm talking about, excuse me, I'll just take a quick break. Don't worry about it, everything's going swimmingly. Now, first, a little break and a word from our sponsors. GoToMeeting. Being able to attach a face to a name is important. It enhances our relationships and the way we do business. But unfortunately, meeting all your clients and colleagues in person can be impossible. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It lets you meet face-to-face from anywhere in the world, even on the go from an iPad. So what is GoToMeeting? Well, it's an online conferencing system that you can access through your laptop, through your iPad, through your mobile device, which enables you to have conference calls where you actually see the other people, you see their faces, and you can see the desktop of the person who's holding the conference. So you can look at product sales figures, charts, funds, etc. So with GoToMeeting by Citrix, it just takes a webcam and a click to collaborate in group HD video. You can see your attendees eye to eye while collaborating on documents in real time. You'll feel intimately connected even if you're thousands of miles apart. Plus, GoToMeeting is so easy to use. iPad users, you can just download the free GoToMeeting app to join. I've used GoToMeeting on my laptop in the demo that we did before we started having it as a sponsor, and it is really good, very productive. The quality is amazing. Start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting. And everybody out there can have a free 30-day trial. Don't wait. Go and take advantage of this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. That's visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Make sure you use that promo code. That's what will give you special offer. Gosh, my throat is very tickled today. I'm not sure how far I'm going to be able to get through this, but I will battle on. Thank you very kindly for still listening in, but I probably sound all bugged up, sniffly and coughy. So, SEO. We've been a bit theoretical over the last few weeks. I've been talking about how to look for photographs better, technique, ideas, attitudes, all that sort of stuff. So what I thought I'd do is get back to the core of some of the things that, you know, that I know I really enjoy about photography. And I know I've said, you know, we shouldn't, but I do, and it's the kit. And these are just some really simple accessories that if you've been into photography a while, you've probably already got. Maybe something you might not. But if you're new to it, you might. These are the things that, the little gadgets that help you on your way. And it's kind of based on the sort of streamlined kit I've come up with after going out on loads of photo walks over the last few years, and how I've kind of pared down my kit to basically, which is quite a lightweight bag, just a camera, a couple of lenses, and a few bits. Now, this is based on what I like to take photographs of, my style, which is really kind of landscape, street, and outside photography. It's wandering around in a place, whether it be in the countryside, town, or city, and taking photographs of stuff. It's not really inside doing portraits or doing weddings or things like that. So, you know, different people will get different mileage out of the things I'm talking about. So, first up, as soon as you get a camera, whether it be film or digital. And obviously I'm talking about SLRs here, but most of this stuff applies to old cameras from compacts to bridge cameras to film cameras as well. I'm using SLR, but if, when I start talking about specific things, and apply them to the kit you've got. So the first thing is a spare battery. Whenever you get a camera, always get a spare battery with it. Because there's nothing worse than being out with your camera, maybe you're on holiday, you're on a day trip, and the battery dies. Now, modern lithium-ion batteries, rechargeable ones you get in cameras do last a long time. But you've got to have a spare. Also, when you are thinking about buying a spare, just check out prices online as well, on eBay and things like that. Don't necessarily go for the one that's offered to you with the camera, because it might be a little bit expensive. Third-party batteries, although I'm always recommending them, might not be good. They're what I use, and I've had great use out of them. This kind of brings up the thorn issue of battery grips. Now, battery grip is a big thing you clang on the bottom of an SLR that enables you to use only two batteries in it. Sometimes it can make the camera work faster. It gives you some extra buttons, so when you're holding the camera in portrait mode, you don't have to sort of stretch around. Well, generally, some people like them, some people don't. I've got a battery grip for my 350D. Do I use it? No. Why don't I use it? Because I think it makes the camera too big to go in my camera bag, it's too bulky, and I don't have a problem. Because the 350D is quite a small camera anyway, using it in portrait and landscape doesn't really matter, it's just a quick flick of the wrist, so to say. But I can understand why people might want a spare battery grip, because it also means that when you're shooting, you don't have to worry about changing batteries, because you've got that extended battery. However, there is one good reason why everybody who has an SLR should get a battery grip. Not necessarily one from manufacturer. Excuse me. But just a third party one. And this is the ability to use AA batteries. I'll talk about camera bags in a minute, but I have a big camera bag in the cabin, my Lowepro 400AW Machine 307. But I don't actually use that often to go out in because it's too big and it's too heavy. But I do keep my battery grip in there. And the battery grip, not only can it take two batteries for the camera, but also a special cartridge, which means the camera can take AA batteries. And the big advantage of that is, I'm pretty sure AA batteries are going to be around for a long, long time. And in fact, AA batteries are probably going to be around a lot longer than the Canon 350D batteries are going to be around, you know, in 10 years' time perhaps. So if it's still working, that's a big if. If I want to use my Canon 350D in 10 years' time, and it still works, chances are the lithium-ion batteries it came with won't work in chargers. And I probably won't be able to buy those particular types of batteries anymore, because Canon, like most manufacturers, change their batteries every other model. But because I've got that battery grip, I can just pop AAs in there, recharge them or otherwise, and I can, it will work. So just something to think about. I'm not saying the battery grip you should definitely have, because I don't use one, but it could be good for spare memory, glass spare memory. You know, again, what's worse than being out and your battery going flat? How about your camera still works but you can't take any more pictures? And you can't spend the time going through and deleting them, so make sure you get spare memory. Spare memory is really cheap. Don't get the biggest cameras. Yeah. Just get the one you can afford and have a few spares. I know there's arguments about should you have one big card in the camera or lots of little ones, because if one big card fails, you lose everything. Well, the way I look at it is this. You're more likely to... Well, I don't really care either way, to be honest. I'm pretty skint, so I'm only for cheap cards. Hey, give you an idea how old my camera is, 350D. It's usually 2GB compact flash card. What about that 2GB memory? But I still love it. If you change cards, there's always a chance you'll drop the card, you know, on the floor while you're doing it. Chances are you'll be standing near a drain and it'll fall down. So that's the reason for having big memory cards. The argument, and the other thing is, especially with compact flash cards, it's easy to put them in wrong and bend all the pins. I did a wedding and you did that. But another argument for big cards. But either way, I don't think it really matters. Just have spares. Bit of a controversial one, this one next. But it's something that's free. Everybody should have on their laptop, on their computer, wherever you store your photos, a copy of Google's Picasa 3 photo editing software. For the only reason that it gives you free online backup of your photographs, if you open up a Google account, which is free. So I think that's pretty amazing, don't you? And I don't know how long this will last, but what happens is you turn Picasa on, you tell it to look through your photos, it'll scan them all, you sign into your Google account, and you go into the options, in Picasa this is, and you say, options for uploading, and you say best for sharing on the web. And with Google accounts, you get 2GB worth of free storage. But you get unlimited storage of photos as long as they're shared on that setting, best for the web. So it doesn't upload your photos at full resolution, excuse me, but it uploads them good enough where if you were to lose anything, they're still going to be there, and you've got that copy. So if you're like me, you know, you can't really afford online paid backup, Picasa 3 will do it for free. So although, as I say, you know, it's not a full resolution you're getting, at least you're getting something. But actually, it's a pretty damn good photo editor and organizing tool as well. Play around with it, would be nice. Next essential accessory, a blower and cleaning pads. We all get a bit paranoid, don't we, about keeping our kit clean, which, does it really affect the performance? No. Will it make it last longer? Maybe. And blowers are great because if you get some sand on your lens, for example, or your LCD screen on the back of your camera, if you try and rub it off with a cloth, you could scratch that plastic or that black. But blower, yeah, expensive one, you know, sketchy one. it won't stack up. Cleaning cloths are good as well. Again, with cleaning cloths, as soon as we get dirty, put them away, buy some new ones. You know, don't have dirty ones in your can of that you can use it for really easy. Now, next up, a bag. Now, I'm a big believer in don't get a bag that's too big. It should just be big enough to set your camera, your cards, your spare memory card, your spare battery. If it's an SLR, you want space for a spare lens, and maybe some filters, and it should be comfortable and not too big. And that's it. Because there's nothing, it's one of my favourite sayings, there's nothing worse than it. It's a bad idea to walk around with too much camera gear. Because you get tired, you can't concentrate, and your photography will suffer. Plus, I don't know, I don't really want to be walking around a city with all my camera stuff on me without getting my camera. So, a smallish bag over your shoulder, you can just take those few things. And make sure in that bag, in the pocket where you have the accessories and in the main compartment, have a couple of bags of silica gel. You know those little pouches you get with electronic goods that keep them dry? Put some of them in, and they will help to keep things dry too. What have we got next? Alright, so your spare lens. If you've got a bridge camera or something, don't worry about that, because you've already got it. And if you've got an SLR, you know, one of the first things you buy, you haven't got a good camera, is a second lens. And most kit lenses are 18 to 55mm, which is a good wide angle walk around. It's a good telephoto. 55 to 250 IS, nice on the Canon or Nikon side. 75 to 300, IS is a bit expensive. But that will just give you almost everything you could ever need in terms of landscape, wildlife, and sports. We're not talking massively expensive lenses, it's just about focal length. Will get you in the right view. And for those lenses, make sure you get yourself some lens hoods. Highly underrated lens hoods. But they're the things you either, none of those old rubber ones, I have a couple of them, but I screw them on if I can, you pop them up. Or the newer kind of style plastic ones. And they do a grand job of increasing contrast and clarity in your photos. You wouldn't leave it just where you need the lens hood. Because what they do is they stop incidental lights coming into your camera at funny angles. You know, in other words, light that you don't really want to come in the camera comes in and it bounces around the lens and makes things look a little bit misty or foggy. If you haven't taken a photograph and it's just that, you know, that little bit lack of contrast. A bit like when you take a photo into the sun. That's flare or glare. Not necessarily, I'm not talking about those little circles like a little, are they gone on? Shapes you get. But just the general milkiness and lack of contrast. Is caused by light coming to the camera. You don't want it. By adding a simple hood, you can help to cut that down if not eliminate it entirely. And the other good thing is that they also protect the front of your lens because they're sticking out. So if you drop it, that thing breaks first and breaks the wall. And also, if you're knocking a lens or something, it's the lens hood that takes the beating. And that also is a good link to the idea of UV filters, you know, these clear-cast filters on your lens. And again, I know there's lots of talk about should you be adding a cheap little piece of glass onto the front of your lens. I mean, hey, look, I know my two lenses that I've got, my IS lenses, have got UV filters. I know it's probably not the best image quality, but if I drop them or when I get a sand on them, I can always do those UV filters anyway. But I know people say, well, it's the cheapest bit, front element, is the cheapest bit of the camera to replace. But hey, look, I'm so skint, I don't want to replace any of my camera kit, let alone the front element. So I'm happy that they're on there. And I was listening to the Film Photography podcast the other day, and they were talking about how great it was that when you buy a second-hand camera kit that could be 20, 30, 40 years old, SLR lens that is, and they've got a UV filter on, you know, the UV filter is all maggy and horrible, then you unscrew it, and then you've got this pristine glass, this pristine lens underneath, and that's really good. So, you know, go with the UV. Go with the lens. The other type of filter, however, that is very important, really helpful for your wide-angle lens, especially if you use it in the telephoto too, is a polarizing filter. Now, a polarizing filter is a very clever thing that helps to cut out glare from light that's coming from a specific direction or reflection. So, imagine you're taking a picture across a smooth lake, and the sun is gleaming off the lake. put the polarizer filter on and turn the filter, that glare that's coming off the lake disappears. And all of a sudden you can see through the clear water the rocks or the sand of fishing below. Similar thing, you take a nice landscape picture, there's some nice trees. And there's a lot of reflection from the tree, a lot of light from the sun. Turn your polarizer filter, it cuts out the glare from this tree, and so the true, lovely, saturated greenness comes through. You've got a lovely blue sky. Turn your polarizer filter, and the blue gets even deeper and stronger. And that's what polarizing filters do. It depends on the angle you're standing to the sun. Really, you should be at right angles to the sun to get the best effect. But they get rid of glare. And they give you colours more, give you a photo with a little more saturation to them. It's great, especially if you can move. However, there is a price to pay. And the price to pay is you're cutting out some of that light. So you do have to be careful. If you're in lower light conditions, you can start putting your camera in situations where there's a little bit too little light, you've got even longer exposure, you could lose the camera. Watch out for that. And you can get polarizing filters, not only for SLRs, but bridge cameras. And you can even hold one just in the front of a compact camera's lens as well, and get the same effect as that. ND filters, I've got an ND filter. Do I ever use it very much? No, because I don't tend to be out with my tripod. But what the neutral density filter does is it, well, again, blocks out more light, so you can have light exposures where otherwise you couldn't do. So think about a waterfall, think about the sea where you want that lovely misty effect, you need to use an ND filter. Another great use for ND filter is if you want a very small depth of field, but you're out on a sunny day, and your camera's being forced to use a tight aperture, if you put an ND filter on, that'll block out some of the light, and then you can use that big aperture again, so you reduce that depth of field. One of the kind of first accessories that lots of people don't know that we should get is a tripod. Now, I can't remember the last time I took a tripod out on photo booth. Probably because the ones I've got are big and heavy, but it's another thing to sling over your shoulder, isn't it? And with modern lenses and cameras that work well at high ISOs and have image stabilized lenses, do you always need one? No. Tripods are a great aid to composition and taking better photographs because they cause it to slow down. But I still think it's good to have a tripod. Because without a tripod, things like night photography and light exposure photography are nigh on impossible. And you can also have it for doing things around the house, like recording video, doing macro, things like that. So I would say, you know, it's great to have a tripod, but don't expect to be lugging it everywhere. Now, I might like them slightly uptight, but hardly buy one, but will I still want to lug it around? I don't know. So, it's a good accessory to have as a photographer. I think any photographer should have one, but whether you'll use it that much, I don't know. But I know when you need it, you definitely need it. The thing that kind of goes with the tripod as well is get a little remote. The little camera ones are cheap, actually. The most camera manufacturers, there's a third party one that's very cheap. Just a little, wireless or wired remote, it doesn't really matter. You can use to fire your camera when you don't have to press on the button. Helps awfully in situations where you don't want to touch the camera to choose the camera shape, or you just want to be away from the camera when you're doing composition and stuff like that. Now, close-up filters, brilliant idea. If you want to have a lightweight camera kit and stick with two lenses on your SLR, the little filters that you can screw onto the front of your camera, and I'm talking about the thin ones, not the chunky ones, are great. I've used them a lot with my film camera, one of my film cameras, the SLC-101. They've been very, very, very successful indeed. Okay, the image quality isn't up there with the dedicated lens, but it's good enough. And I can slip them in my camera bag and they don't have much light. They don't have much weight at all. another thing you can do actually, another kind of essential but non-essential accessory, if you've got an SLR, is get an M42 lenses, the M42 to your lens mount adapter and the extension tube, so you can do really good macro photography. And that's where the tripod can come in handy as well. Because the magnification you can get with M42 lenses and extension tube is amazing. And it opens up a whole genre of photography that otherwise you wouldn't have access to. It's a really cheap way of doing it. I've talked about it in the past, and if you go to rodnorthrow.com and look for the I think it's in the 350D section. I've done a bit on macro photography and M42 lenses. It really is good. Do I lug my M42 lenses with this institute around me all the time? No, but I've got them for when I want to take nice pictures of spiders and flowers in the back garden when I'm at home. So that's good. I mean, yes, another kind of my final kind of accessory that I think everybody should have, that what is worth having, is, you know, have a decent photography book, a reference book that you can always go back to, have a read to kind of fire you up and get you in the right direction again. And for me, so the books I really like just picking up and flipping through are Scott Kelby's digital photography books. If you haven't had them already, I know not everybody likes the sense of humour, but I like the format of the books. They're small. You can read through one, you know, in half an hour, 45 minutes. You can choose the bits, the genre of photography you want to work on, and it's dead simple. It just has like a picture of a flower. And he has the settings he used to take the photograph, and then he also tells you, you know, in order to take this photograph, this is what I do. And it's really good. And he stresses the important things, you know, about getting sharp photographs. If you want sharp photographs, do this. If you want to catch a movement there, or subject there, do this for panning, do this for stuff. Very, very good. Simple. Gets you thinking, oh, do I do that? And gets you on one of those right tracks. So, Scott Kelby's digital photography. I think there's three of them now. One, two, three. Start with one. I think you buy all three together for a song on Amazon. So, yeah, so there we go. Right, so, a bit of a short podcast. I've got to really struggle now with my throat. If you've got any ideas, what are your essential photography things that I've missed out of? There's loads. Go to rubberphoto.com, go to the show notes for episode 189, and add them in the comments. Or maybe start a new thread over on the Flipper Photo Group. I'm a bit knackered, so I don't think I'm going to be doing much to them. Thanks everybody in the Flipper Group for putting their work in. Some superb photos there. Gosh, I always have a look in there every day, and it's working really, really good. Well done, chaps. Chapesses, fantastic. Thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music. But most of all, thanks to you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from RobnonPhoto.com. You can email me, scalespeedbook.com. Check out RobnonPhoto.com for more details. And hopefully, pretty soon, I'll see you on the podcast.